good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 12, 2019. A South Sudanese rebel leader is in the United States with a message for U.S. officials.
It is not good for us to leave all powers of the state in the hands of one person. This resulted into tyranny. This resulted into dictatorship against our people. This is why Salva Kiir decrees, especially in the 32 states, he decreed this.
And the outgoing Norwegian envoy to South Sudan says the parties to the conflict have a huge task ahead of them.
There shouldn't be more extensions. That's clear from the agreement they have entered into themselves. It's fairly predictable that by November there will be another form of political crisis around that. And so it's really going to be up to the parties how they manage this.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebel leader General Thomas Cirilo Swaka says the prospects for stability in South Sudan are very slim. The leader of the National Salvation Front, a group which opted not to sign the South Sudan September 2018 peace deal, says the agreement gives President Salva Kiir excessive powers. Swaka says he's in the United States to tell Americans that if some of President Kiir's powers are not slashed, there will be no peace and stability in South Sudan.
We have been telling the people of South Sudan, the region, the international community, that National Salvation Front and its allies in South Sudan National Democratic Alliance, we refrain to sign this peace agreement because we believe that it is not an agreement which is going to benefit the people of South Sudan. This is an agreement rewarding the people who destroyed South Sudan, and the root causes of the conflict completely are not addressed. We think that unless the root causes are addressed, peace is not going to prevail in South Sudan.
You've been saying this, that the agreement does not address the root causes of the conflict. I mean, these are your words. Someone would ask you, what are the root causes of the conflict? The RCS addressed all the grievances that you in the opposition presented to IGAD.
It is not good for us to leave all powers of the state in the hands of one person. This resulted into tyranny. This resulted into dictatorship against our people. This is why Salva Kiir decrees, especially in the 32 states, he decreed this and without consulting anybody. And this is why we are arguing that in the presidency, we need the power of the state not to be in the hands of one person, so that we don't experience what is now happening in South Sudan.
But the agreement gives powers to other people. President Kiir will be having 5 vice presidents. That is, dividing powers. He's not taking all the powers to himself.
Unfortunately, John, the vice president doesn't have any power. I want to tell the people of South Sudan they should not be deceived. The 5 vice presidents, including the first vice president, they don't have any power. Number 2, we are talking about the federal system of governance. We want the federal system of governance to be implemented in South Sudan so that we devolve the power of the people from the center to the level, to different levels of governance, so that our people realize their dreams in life, so that they develop themselves, so that they take charge of their affairs. We are talking about this, and this agreement is not. They just mentioned that the federal system of governance is a demand of the people of South Sudan, and they stopped there. They did not put it as a provision to be implemented. They talk about federal system that is going to be discussed in the transitional constitutional making process, but we know that the parliament is controlled by Salva Kiir, and therefore it will not succeed. So we know all the games that they're doing.
IGAD's special envoy, Ambassador Ismail Wise, has been reaching out to you several times. I remember you met with him twice. What was he telling you?
Ambassador Ismail Wise was directed by the Council of Ministers of IGAD to continue discussing with us about peace and war in South Sudan. Unfortunately, they took a train of threatening us. Either we join the agreement or we are called spoilers and different kind of things. And we told them, no, we are not going to surrender the people of South Sudan to live as slaves under the system of Salva Kiir. We are not going to betray the people of South Sudan. We are going to stand by the people of South Sudan to the end. And this is what we told Ismail Wise. And we told them that as mediators, they are supposed not to threaten us to sign something against the people of South Sudan. And this is our position.
Apart from what you're saying, that the peace agreement gives all powers to President Kiir, what other issues are you not happy with in this agreement?
He wants us to revert to the 10 states because we believe that 10 states is not problematic, at least, because it was there in the Constitution. Again, during the agreement between Riek Machar and Salva Kiir in 2015, it was also there in that agreement. And again, it was endorsed by the ministers of IGAD. So we feel that you have these three legal reasons that we should really revert back to 10 states. But the 32 states, which was decreed by Salva Kiir, it has annexed different communities' land to another community, which is problematic and made our people, our communities now to suffer and fight themselves in South Sudan. And this is why you are against the 32 states.
It's an open secret that the government is saying you are a regional leader, you're not a national leader. How would you react to that? They say Equatoria is too close to your heart.
Of course, a tribal dictatorship like in Juba under Salva Kiir will say this. Remember, during our wars and our struggles against Khartoum, they call us the same names. So every dictator, every oppressor, this is how they behave always. They want to divide people, they want to call people names so that they continue oppressing our people, they continue clicking into power. So they will use these kind of things, tribal leader, regional leader, family leader, for that matter. They will use this kind of tactics, but the people of South Sudan, they know what is happening in South Sudan, and they believe that National Salvation Front is the right struggle for to bring and restore peace, the real peace in South Sudan, which is dignified.
You've been sitting on the fence, and how would you restore peace when you are not inside?
When you are struggling, a struggle for freedom, a struggle for justice, a struggle for humanity is not measured by time. When our fathers started to struggle from 50s, they did not say we are going to have only two years or 3 years. Then from there, if you don't achieve it, then we surrender to live as slaves. We as human beings in South Sudan will continue to struggle until we achieve our freedom, until we achieve our dignified life. Doesn't matter how long it's going to take.
That's Rebel Leader General Thomas Cirilo Swaka. He was speaking to me from our studio here in Washington yesterday. SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar has agreed to a face-to-face meeting with President Salva Kiir in Juba. In a letter dated July 8, Machar said he is ready to meet Kiir, but wants regional bloc IGAD to determine the status of his house arrest. SPLM-IO official, who is part of the NPTC, says Machar should be allowed to move freely within South Sudan so he can mobilize support for the peace deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio has details for VOA from Juba.
In a letter addressed to Tutka Luwak, chairman of the National Pre-Transitional Committee and President Kiir's security advisor, Machar says he is ready to talk directly with the president so long as he can move about freely in South Sudan. The Kiir administration invited Machar to meet with Kiir after the parties missed the May deadline to form a transitional government of national unity. The period was extended for another 6 months. In the letter viewed by VOA, Machar said he is prepared to meet with Kiir to discuss the challenges facing implementation of pre-transitional activities since the 2 months extension period passed without what Machar terms substantial progress. Machar says Kiir should make a special request to the Transitional Military Council in Khartoum, where he claims to be under house arrest. He says Kiir should ask the Sudanese authorities to transport him to Juba and back to Khartoum after the talks. Stephen Parr Kwol, SPLM-IO Secretary for Foreign Relations, says direct talks between Kiir and Machar are crucial at this point in time, and Machar should be able to go where he wants in South Sudan.
In his response to Honorable Tut Galoat of NPTC, are the conditions that must be met even for him to participate in that dialogue. We have been demanding as a party that our chairman should be set free to participate physically in peace dissemination, in this process of peace implementation.
Parr says Machar should have been allowed by IGAD to meet with his constituency and talk about peace the same way Kiir has done in his home region of Barral Ghazal and parts of the Equatorial region to give confidence to citizens that the revised peace deal is real. Parr says once Machar returns to Juba, the two leaders will discuss how to implement critical security arrangements.
Cantonment sites need services for our soldiers, food, shelter, medicine. You must have those in the cantonment site. Otherwise, the forces will disperse. And that is actually the critical thing at this point in time.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei confirmed the invite to Machar but declined to comment on any preconditions set by the SPLM-IO for Machar to travel to Juba for face-to-face talks with Kiir in a communique issued after its CGC7's extraordinary summit held in Juba on May 7th. The IGAD Council of Ministers recommended that any restrictions on Machar be lifted. In his letter, Machar suggested that such face-to-face meetings with Mr. Kiir should be conducted under an IGAD summit and that IGAD should review its resolution of the proposed meeting, whose date or location has yet to be announced. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The outgoing Norwegian ambassador to South Sudan says the parties to the revitalized peace deal have done little to demonstrate they will be ready to form a transitional government of national unity by November 12. A Juba-based analyst says the government and the opposition must do more to convince South Sudanese as well as the international community that the new government will be formed by November 12. Wake Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Norwegian Ambassador Lars Andersson says 2 months of the six-month extension of the pre-transitional period have come and gone with little so for it. He says the parties to the agreement must implement security arrangements to pave the way to form a unity government within the scheduled time.
There shouldn't be more extensions. That's clear from the agreement they have entered into themselves. Now it's fairly predictable that by November there will be another form of political crisis around that. And so it's really going to be up to the parties how they manage this.
Representatives of the various parties to the agreement who sit on the National Pre-Transitional Committee have held several meetings to try move forward the implementation of the agreement. But Andersson says the international community wants to see President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar meet regularly to build trust and confidence between their supporters and reassure the people they are working to restore peace.
I think at this point it's not about the people on the ground working together, because we also see good cooperation between the military, the different armed groups. So it's not about the people on the ground at this point. It is actually about top leadership now coming together and showing their strong commitment to this.
In May, shortly after the parties agreed to extend the pre-transitional period, the Kiir administration pledged $100 million to fund pre-transitional activities, including security arrangements. It's not clear if the government has released the money it pledged. Andersson says Norway is not ready to put up money to carry out security arrangements.
We did provide support under the previous agreement, but we really do think that the main responsibility for this lies on the parties themselves, and specifically the government, because the government is the one that has access to real resources.
Zakaria Deng Akol, a policy analyst with the Juba-based Sud Institute, says the gap between the international community and the South Sudanese parties to the deal could suggest continuing mistrust.
Whatever support that they are giving, even if they are not supporting the institutions that are dealing with the implementation of the security arrangements, any support that they are giving, I think, is still welcome. The responsibility, for the most part, rests on the government. The government should mobilize resources to move forward with the implementation of the security arrangements.
CITISAMA, the body monitoring the implementation of the security arrangements, warned last week that by dragging out the pre-transitional activities, the parties risk failing to establish the unity government in November. CITISAM chairman Desta Abiche says the parties have yet to canton their forces, a key component of the security arrangements. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Cameroonians use goats to fight terrorism. We'll tell you how you can make good use of your goats right after this break.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time your family celebrated an important event? Can you describe it?
I remember in 2015, that's the first time we got a degree in our family. So it was important to us and it was a big event. We enjoyed it. Everything was kawa. We enjoyed.
In March, when we had my brother perform well in his PAD, the event was so marvelous, whereby he invited most of his friends.
We had a wedding of my cousin. It was a joyous celebration and we really had fun.
Celebrating my parents' anniversary. It was so grateful and very nice. Lots of people came. And it wasn't just about the celebration, but it was a lesson to us, the young generation.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese Transitional Military Council says security forces foiled an attempted coup on Thursday and arrested a dozen of military officers and soldiers believed to be behind the move. The council's head of security accused elements from the previous regime of trying to distract the signing of a power-sharing deal between military and opposition leaders. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
It is the sixth time Sudan military rulers say they have stopped a coup attempt since President Omar al-Bashir was ousted from power on April 11 by the military. Late last month, military leaders announced they detained more than 20 military and security intelligence officers suspected of planning a coup against the Transitional Military Council. Speaking in Arabic on a state television last night, Head of Security General Jamal Omar Ibrahim said security forces had been monitoring the 12 officers who were arrested for several days.
Seven of them are in active military service and five of them are in an active list and the other four are junior intelligence officers who have also been apprehended. Security forces are still looking for the rest, including the ringleader of the failed coup attempt.
Omar says the arrested officers and soldiers are being interrogated. He describes the latest alleged failed coup attempt on military rulers as a distraction to block the signing of the power-sharing deal between military and opposition leaders in Sudan. Last Friday, the Transitional Military Council and the opposition agreed in principle to form a civilian-led transitional government in Sudan and to equally share power in a sovereign council. The African Union, which is mediating between the two sides, says a joint technical team is drafting the final deal, which should be signed soon. Speaking in Arabic to reporters early this morning at Corinthia Hotel in Khartoum, mediator Mohamed Labat, the African Union envoy to Sudan, said copies of the deal will be distributed to the parties tomorrow and should be signed next week.
The two sides agreed last evening on a unified political declaration which defines all institutions during the transitional period. The agreement was reached through patriotic consensus and a responsible spirit among the parties.
Retired Sudanese Army General Fadalla Burma Nasir says both sides are wasting time and should form a transitional government now. He says the regime of Omar al-Bashir is still active in Sudan.
If they are very serious to tackle the problem of their country, and they know that the country is facing a lot of problems, political problems, facing security problems, they shouldn't waste such a lot of time. From my own point of view, they are, maybe as a lot of people say that, they are related to the old regime.
U.S. lawmakers, Burma and other countries are calling on the Transitional Military Council and the opposition to sign the power-sharing agreement and quickly form a transitional government in the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to East Africa. Human rights defenders in Tanzania are asking the government to clarify the status of missing journalist Azoro Gwanda. Earlier this week, a top Tanzanian official said Gwanda is dead. Now, a human rights activist says he was told that might not be true. Charles Kombe has the story for VOA from Dar es Salaam.
In an interview with the BBC, Minister of Foreign Affairs Palmagamba Kabudi was asked to comment on the whereabouts of Azory Gwanda, who has not been seen since November 2017. Kabudi said Gwanda has not only disappeared, he is dead. His statement went viral and became a topic of social media discussion in Tanzania, with some people demanding an explanation of how, when, where Gwanda died. Onesmo Olengurumo, Executive Director for Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition, says he has been told that Kabudi misspoke.
Imeonekana kuonyesha waziri kama kukiri kwamba Azori amepotea.
According to the law, for a missing person to be announced as dead, it takes 5 years. He says they have communicated with Kabudi himself for clarification on the issue. He says the minister assures them that he didn't mean that Azori is dead, but he was trying to say that he is missing. The executive director for the League on Human Rights Center, Anna Henga, says she's disappointed in the minister's statement and says it shows a lack of concern for Gwanda.
He said Azory Gwanda is dead and many people died, by the way, so it seems that it's not an issue to him as a representative of the government. I would recommend the government to continue looking for this person because it's their mandate according to the constitution.
Gwanda is a journalist who was working at Mwananchi Communication, a company that publishes the Citizen newspaper. He wrote a series of articles documenting the murders of local government officials and police officers by an unidentified assailant on motorcycles in the town of Kibiti. He went missing on November 21, 2017. According to a statement from his wife, Gwanda was taken away in a car, sitting in between unknown people. Before they left, he told her that he would return shortly, but that was the last day she saw him. No one has claimed responsibility for his abduction. The One Free Press Coalition, a global network of editors and publishers, recently included Gwanda on a list of top 10 violations of press freedom that require global attention. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Cameroon has begun distributing thousands of goats and sheep to villages on its northern border with Nigeria, with the aim of preventing unemployed youth from joining terrorist group Boko Haram. The hope is that the livestock can provide basic income to empower thousands of vulnerable families and stop them from joining extremist groups who promise jobs. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Morwa in northern Cameroon.
The government of Cameroon this week began rolling out an unlikely weapon in the fight against Boko Haram militants. Authorities are distributing thousands of goats and sheep to young Cameroonians in villages along the border with Nigeria. The program aims to providing livestock for a basic income in order to stop the Islamist militant group's recruiting tactics. In the village of Salak, 17-year-old Umar Nafisatu received 4 sheep. Nafisatu says she is looking forward to having baby sheep so she can sell them to pay for her school fees. She is the only one to take care of herself, she says, after her father and mother passed away. Boko Haram fighters killed Nafisatu's parents along with 21 others when they attacked her village in 2017, forcing her to flee. Just a week later, Nafisatu's only sister was killed in a suicide bomb attack in a mosque in Kolofata. Boko Haram had recruited her with promises of a job as a house cleaner, then forced her to carry out the attack. Cameroon's government plans to distribute 60,000 goats and sheep by the end of the year. The Minister of Livestock, known only as Dr. Tiger, says the animals will go to those who have suffered in the fight against Boko Haram.
Il s'agit à travers ces actifs productifs d'aider les familles vulnérables.
He says the initiative is to help families who are vulnerable by providing animals that are fruitful and enable them to have money. They will provide for their basic needs, says Tiger, take care of their families and help to avoid temptations that can jeopardize peace and bring chaos. The Lake Chad Basin Commission, with 8 member nations in the region, including Cameroon, says some areas attacked by Boko Haram have unemployed rates as high as 90%. Midji Yawa Bakari is governor of Cameroon's far north region. He notes there have been no major Boko Haram attacks in the past year, but says the militants are still recruiting and the military remains on alert.
Nous appelons les populations à plus de vigilance.
He says people should be vigilant because Boko Haram is recruiting jobless youths with promises to improve their living conditions. Village militias, known as self-defense groups, should be reactivated to work in collaboration with the military, officials, traditional rulers, and the clergy, says Bakari. He says they can share information on any suspected activities that may upset the peace that has been returning to villages and towns. For some of those villagers, that peace may sound like this. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Marua, Cameroon.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. That story from Cameroon sounds very good. Remember to make good use of your goats. As you just heard, South Sudan in Focus now has a WhatsApp number. We invite you to leave us a brief message on +1 202 630 8011 and tell us what is happening in your area. You can also use the number to tell us what you think about a story you've heard on this program. Again, the number is +1 202 630 8011. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Umataki by Mr. Langs. We've been listening to Mr. Langs with the song Umataki. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mama na mabine sidita.